You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Light Course, given to the Waldorf School teachers. However, this last section, section 11, after the 10 lectures proper to the course, is a discussion statement given in Dornach on August 8, 1921, so over a year later. At the conclusion of her very noteworthy remarks, Dr. Rebell said that I had once commented that these more recent experiments could actually serve to confirm the Goethean theory of color. At that time, Dr. Rebell was so kind as to give me one of her treatises that are along exactly the same lines, and I said that the facts coming out of modern physics are indeed of such a nature that they would gradually have to lead to a confirmation of Goethean color theory. Today, there is unfortunately no possibility of going into all the pros and cons of Goethean color theory, and let's say anti-Goethean color theory. As the matter stands, for the time being, the concepts of physics that are the norm today are based on theoretical premises of such a nature that what I once heard from a physicist with whom I had a conversation about Goethean color theory is indeed correct. He said, simply and honestly, as I can only verify in unmistakable terms, that a physicist of the present day can't make heads or tails of Goethean color theory. And that is actually quite true. We must not forget that certain things have to be overcome before Goethean color theory is to be taken seriously by physics. Isn't it true that the physicists of today feel bound to investigate what they call light in such a way that, as far as possible, the subjective plays no role in the field of investigation? Readers aside, subjective is in quotes. End of readers aside. To a certain extent, the experience they have of light phenomena serves at most to make them more attentive to the fact that something is happening there. However, what the physicists want to include in their interpretations of light phenomena, which they also extend to color phenomena, is an entity that is completely independent of subjective experience. Goethe starts out from a completely different premises for his whole way of thinking. Therefore, I still consider what I said in 1893 in a lecture in Frankfurt am Main about Goethe's view of nature to be right in a certain sense. I said it was possible to talk about Goethe's statements in the field of morphology, and even at that time I gave a lecture about that, because the ideas that Goethe had about metamorphosis and about the origin of species in connection with metamorphosis already coincided to a certain extent with those that were coming, although in a completely different way, from the Darwin-Haeckel point of view. Thus, in a certain sense at least, there was already a field in which the points of view overlapped. However, with Goethe's color theory, which doesn't aspire to be a theory of optics, by the way, that is not yet the case at all. Therefore, on the basis of anthroposophy, let's say, it is indeed possible to talk about Goethean color theory. A conversation is certainly possible there. But a discussion about what physicists have to say about color, about what they derive from the physical basis of their science, is still going to be completely fruitless, even today. For that to happen, certain basic concepts that were implicit with Goethe and were the starting point for his theory of color would still have to be explained so that they could really be made the basis. Therefore, I consider everything I have said in my books about Goethean color theory to have been put out into the world for the time being without any pretension of beginning a productive discussion with the ideas of physics, which, while not contradictory, come from a completely different angle. Now, however, you can be quite certain, and the previous speaker already said a great deal about this, that Goethe would see a confirmation of his basic point of view in all of the phenomena Dr. Rebell so kindly took up today. And that is a proposition I would absolutely defend. If, speaking with Goethe, we say that one side of the spectrum, in other words, what has been called long-wave radiation as opposed to short-wave radiation, is in the relationship of a polarity. This corresponds to the facts of the matter from one angle, but not completely. Polarity is a very abstract relationship, which we can simply apply to various opposites, and thus to this one too. Only, that isn't really the point at all with Goethe here. And readers aside, there's a gap in the transcription. End of readers aside. However much we may believe we can exclude mistakes by some kind of experimental arrangement, whereby we make the bundle of rays narrower and narrower, such that the entire thickness of the bundle of rays, which by the way isn't my expression, but I may employ it here legitimately, is finally cancelled, and then speak of one, in quotes, ray, in the end there is no difference in reality. Whether we take a broad bundle or a narrow one, in principle it doesn't make any difference. Goethe, however, did indicate a difference in principle when he conducted experiments with the small opening. In the prism, we can't exclude what modern physics would like to exclude. For, of course, we can't insert a so-called, quote, ray with a thickness of zero, close quote, into the experimental field somehow. However, it is possible to observe the sharp edge between the dark and bright areas. Indeed, there you do have the sharp edge. When we speak of the sharp edge, to a certain extent we are getting out of the Goethean experiment, exactly what recent physics would like. Goethe worked with the edge, and not with the bundle of rays. That's what is important. This legitimate demand we make for the ideal is fulfilled by the fact that Goethe works with the edge and not with a ray, in other words, or a bundle of rays, and Goethe starts out from what happens at the edge and tries to base the setups of his experiments on that. However, if they were to be carried out in the Goethean sense today, they would have to be carried out quite differently. I hope that, especially in this connection, we will be able to understand basic experiments in our Physical Research Institute in Stuttgart, and that by doing so we will eliminate to an extent what Dr. Schmiedel called veiling, and really learn how to work in an exact way with the edges. Only then will we be able to understand the spectrum of a phenomenon in which the edge phenomena are treated as archetypal, or Ur phenomena. Now, however, if we work in this way with the edge, then we get what Dr. Schmiedel called the polar relationship between one part of the so-called spectrum and the other. Thus, in the Goethean sense, the expression, in quotes, polarity, is much too abstractly applied here. You can use it as an expression for all sorts of different natural phenomena. For lack of time, I can't go into the details this evening, but by constantly trying different experiments, Goethe came to accept a basic opposition between red nature and blue nature. It is important to note that Goethe doesn't speak of red and blue light, that is inconsistent with his sense, but of red and blue nature. Light simply cannot be differentiated, and any kinds of differentiation that may appear are phenomena in and under light. Recent physics makes it possible for us to emphasize that Goethe sets up the entity he calls light against the entity of darkness, not as nothingness, but as a real entity. Now, I can only describe in a few short words what is actually a fairly complicated concept of Goethe's. In the red part of the color tones, as well as in the blue part, we are dealing not with a mixture, but with an interaction of light and darkness, such that in the red part, the color red is the result of the activity of light in the darkness. If we are dealing with red, let's say a red field, we are dealing with light that is active in the darkness. Whereas if we are dealing with the blue side, then we are dealing with the activity of darkness in the light. That is the exact way to express the polarity. I'll admit that a modern physicist naturally can't make much sense of this concept. However, for Goethe, red is the activity of light in darkness, and blue is the activity of darkness in light. We can call that a polarity. It is a polarity. Goethe carries this through with physical color, spectral color actually, and also with chemical color. He is well aware that he is running into uncertainties everywhere, because, of course, he is unable to apply this general principle in specific instances. But if we follow this thought that I have just hinted at in passing, then everywhere that colors occur, where there are color phenomena, in other words, we have something qualitative. And now we have to come to the point where some day the decision in this regard will be made. Nowadays it is still the case, if I may say so, that we experience an abundance of phenomena. Even today you have been generously presented with an abundance of phenomena, about which we would have to give whole series of lectures to show how they actually fit into Goethean color theory and into the whole field of the natural sciences. However, the phenomena we are experiencing nowadays call for corrections of a completely different sort than those given by the theoretical considerations of relativity theory, etc., concerning ideas about the speed of light. As Dr. Rebell herself just emphasized, what we are experiencing right now is that physicists feel constrained to turn to Newton's emission theory once again, although in greatly modified form. Of course, there is a big difference between the Newtonian theory, which was drawn from relatively simple phenomena, and the view of the current era, for the current view is based primarily on the fact that with the usual concepts of wave theory, we can't imagine how the following phenomenon, for example, is possible. If we cause ultraviolet light to strike a metal, electrons are reflected, which can then be studied. These electrons reveal a certain strength, which is not dependent on the distance of the source of the ultraviolet light from the metal. You can place the source far away and still get the same voltage. Now, assuming that the strength of the light remains the same, the intensity would naturally have to decrease progressively in proportion to the distance. However, this is not the case for these electrons reflected by the metal. We see that their strength doesn't decrease at all in proportion to the increase in distance. Rather, it is dependent only on the color. The strength of the color is the same when the source is nearby as when it is at a greater distance. This leads us, first of all, to the conclusion that in general we have to think quite differently about this thing we call light. These days we help ourselves get around this fact by referring to quantum theory, which states that light isn't something continuous that spreads, like gravitation, for example, but instead spreads atomistically. If it spreads atomistically, then we have a given quantum at a given place where it acts. That isn't the issue. The quantum simply can only be at one place. If it is there at all, it triggers the electron effects. These things have led us back to emission theory once again. While Newton imagined that substances, entities, spread out in a measurable way and are such that the intensity decreases with the square of the distance, we now replace these substances with the spreading out of electromagnetic fields, which, however, do actually pass through space in the way described by quantum theory. In other words, we are actually dealing with the emission of electromagnetic fields, whereas the wave theory, which was predominant at the time when I was young, deals only with the simple propagation of motion. Thus, in the latter case, nothing actually radiates in space, only the motion continues. These ideas about what is objectively present are in continuous flux right now, and the known experiments point in every case to what Dr. Rebell so rightly emphasized, that we can't get along with the mere supposition of wavelengths, that it comprises a kind of contradiction in terms. But that's exactly what we are dealing with here. Basically, the situation is simply that for long periods of time, we became accustomed to calculating solely in terms of wavelengths and so forth. The concept was extraordinarily simple. In general, we calculated only objectively in terms of waves of certain wavelengths and vibrations of certain speeds, describing what lies in the spectrum from violet to red by saying that this is the range that makes an impression on the retina of the eye. Beyond red, we have other vibrations that don't make any impression, but they are no different qualitatively, and it's the same on the other side of violet. Some rebelled against this. Some rejected it in an interesting way. For example, Eugen Dreyer conducted many experiments in the 1870s to prove that light, heat, and chemical entities are three completely radically different things. And to a certain extent, that could also definitely be proven. The current state of affairs particularly proves that the whole complex of issues is basically in flux. As soon as we arrive at what is actually known, which apart from the subjective element is summed up under the complex of, quote, light phenomena, close quote, reader aside, there is a gap in the transcription, end of reader aside. The essential thing with Goethe is that he introduced the element that is forcing itself upon physics today. Of course, he introduced it according to the inadequate state of physics at the end of the 18th century. Nevertheless, he did introduce it. Looking at this matter today, we say to ourselves that this is certainly all tremendously interesting. But I must confess that the whole treatment of wave theory was more interesting when I was young, because wave theory was developed to excess, and everything was really calculated quite exactly down to the smallest detail. These days, young people are not plagued with this extravagant wave theory anymore. It's a somewhat different matter whether, based on theoretical mechanics, we calculate the undulation with some kind of ether hypothesis, or we start from the way the electromagnetic fields work. All of that does indeed look a bit more uncertain. Today we don't have a need to calculate everything within light phenomena in such a straightforward way as was still done 30 to 40 years ago. Naturally, it is extraordinarily interesting to work out all these refinements, but they are the result of calculation. And the whole decisive proof for this calculation is actually seen in the interference experiment. Nowadays, the interference experiment is in need of a new explanation. Physics today is willing to admit that, and quantum theory really hasn't achieved much there. The situation is as follows. We haven't gotten very far these days, but we increasingly see how certain very usable numbers that we have in the oscillation figures or wavelengths are all fine tools for calculations, but no one can actually say today that they have any basis in reality. I might say that if we state the wavelength for the so-called red rays and for the blue ones, we have a certain ratio between red and blue that expresses how one number is related to the other. Indeed, today we can say that the ratios of the different numbers to each other are much more important than the absolute value of the individual wavelengths, which takes us from the quantitative into the qualitative. Today we are on our way to saying that we can't manage it only with wavelengths. We need something else. But this something else is getting more and more similar to what Goethe was looking for along his own paths. This isn't clearly recognized yet, but those with an exact knowledge of these things can definitely recognize that physics is gradually leading in this direction. As I said, Goethe would definitely see the phenomena that were presented today as a confirmation of his point of view. Naturally, it is difficult to go into details, because, as of now, the basis has not been created for them. I only want to go into the principles of the plant question, for example. I don't want to go into such things as whether we should be using an expression such as, in quotes, absorbed or not. If you take it merely as a description of what is known, then I have nothing against it. But We make the situation too simple for ourselves by saying that when a pane of glass is placed in the path of light, and behind the glass is a red field, that all the other colors have been swallowed up by the glass, and only the red was allowed to pass through. Then we are replacing a perceived phenomenon with an explanation that comes completely out of the blue, for which there is no known reality. We can definitely stick with the phenomenon. That is good. However, let's look at how Goethe expressed it, still very imperfectly, perhaps. The activity of light, of brightness, in the darkness, is the basis of red. The activity of darkness, in the brightness, in the light, is the basis of blue. What the basis of the nuances is, the shadings of green or orange, isn't important right now. I can't go into that. I can only indicate the basic phenomenon. Then, of course, you have what I indicated just now in a sketchy way. We are dealing here with darkness as a reality. We have to realize there is a good deal of evidence for what I am going to say now, but even looking at the matter superficially, we can come to an understanding of this, that this entity of darkness opposes the light in a certain way. Our subjective feeling tells us this naturally, but so do the objective facts. We have to assume a polarity here, if we don't want to stay with abstractions, and instead go into the concrete facts. Now, if you think about this polarity of light and dark, you will gradually become aware that with darkness, it is impossible, in a way, to speak of the spreading of an entity the way we do with light. The experiments conducted up to now can't tell us anything about this. Just imagine that we describe light as a spreading out that takes place. Naturally, there is more to it, but that is based on supersensible or partially supersensible observations, so let's take it just as a possibility, an hypothesis, for the time being. You can't, then, describe darkness as a spreading out that takes place. Instead, you have to describe darkness as a kind of absorbing that takes place out of the infinite. You wouldn't be able to say, in the case of a room furnished with black walls, that a spreading out occurs, an emission or the like. Rather, an absorption takes place. There are absorptive effects that must have a cause, because they must have a center. But for the time being, it is the potential of absorptive effects that we are dealing with in this black room, speaking trivially, in contrast with the illuminated space we are dealing with in the case of spreading effects. If you bear that in mind, the concept of color becomes more and more concrete. And in blue you have something that absorbs. This is actually only an approximation. While in red, you have something that spreads out, and in green, the neutralization, so to speak. Now, just think. Here we have to go into a deeper layer of the imagination. If you look at the absorptive effects that are present in relation to plant life, then behind the colors, you have an absorptive effect that stands in contrast to certain inner forces of the plant. Here, you have something that plays a role within the whole configuration, in the whole organization of the plant. Having grasped that, we also get ideas that are much more complex than if I say, quote, I place a pane of glass in the path of a light beam and get a red field behind it. Everything besides the red has been swallowed up. Close quote. That takes us to something completely different, to a completely different formulation of the problem. The phenomenon before me demands that I investigate the nature of the material placed in its path. If we begin there, it leads us to a wholly different method of looking at polarization phenomena, for example. In a roundabout way, we arrive at a strict conception, which is what Dr. Rebell also said, and then he speaks to Dr. Rebell. You named one English physicist, but quite a few physicists have already called attention to this problem, that in the case of these phenomena, we are not actually dealing with something that points to the nature of light, but with something that points to the nature of the matter that is placed in opposition to the light, particularly the organic matter of plants. That is where this is leading us more and more, to stop construing polarization as light. That's something that worked wonderfully with the old purely mechanical wave theory, but isn't valid in the same way in the current situation. Now, physicists aren't forced to see the occurrence of polarization phenomena in such a way that they merely build them into light as constructs. Let me read that again, sorry. Now, physicists aren't forced to see the occurrence of polarization phenomena in such a way that they merely build them into light as constructs. Instead, they observe an interaction of light with matter, such that the composition of the substance is revealed by what appears there, even in the case of other phenomena that originate in such a way that we regard them as the emission of electromagnetic waves. Looking at these things today, it is much more interesting to observe how we are gradually weaning ourselves from a method that is based solely on our being so completely accustomed to this mechanical view with the ether, which some, of course, imagine as solid and others as liquid. Readers aside, there's a gap in the transcription. End of readers aside. Indeed, we have grown accustomed to certain ideas and can't get away from them. If we stick with the wave theory, we have to assume that we have to find a different basis for it. And here we have to point out that Goethe was on his way to investigating this basis. The whole wave theory, which he had been familiar with for his whole life, didn't interest him. Rather, he was interested in something I just touched on inadequately when I traced polarity back to the concrete. We delved deeper into what Goethe wanted by taking his theory of color chapter by chapter, even ascending to the sensory moral effects of the colors, where to a certain extent color disappears from the field of view. And if I may say so, qualities of spirit, soul, and morality appear. We experience them in the place of red and blue when we are transported into the realm of the soul. And Goethe would say in this case that it is only then that we actually learn something about the essence of color, when color disappears and something wholly different appears. What appears is the beginning of the paths to higher knowledge, described by anthroposophically oriented spiritual science, which lead us to abandon the separation of subject and object that has no place on a certain level of knowledge, and which instead lead the subject to live into the object. This is something we have to pay attention to. There can be no satisfactory theory of knowledge if an absolute chasm lies between subject and object, but only if this subject-slash-object classification is a temporary assumption, as has been described epistemologically. Modern physics, in the way that, say, Planck defines it, certainly has the goal of excluding the subjective completely and describing the phenomena as they occur in an objective field without any consideration of the human being. Louis Blanc says that physics should only look for what an inhabitant of Mars, even if organized in a completely different way, could also claim to be true of the objective world. And that is definitely right. But the question is, can we also find something in the human being that corresponds to the results of physics, which are sought purely in terms of measurement, number, and weight? Is there something in the human being that, with correspondingly higher knowledge, corresponds to that? And here we have to say, yes, there is. We pass right through this region, which is then experienced, and which the modern physicist actually recovers only by a construction, a certain construction based on the phenomenon. Only the way this region looks is such that the substance forming its basis is no longer material, but spiritual in nature. We even gain the right to apply the formulas of physics in a certain form, just plugging in a different kind of substance. Newton thought that a kind of measurable matter is plugged into the equations, the formulas. In Huygens' wave theory. I can't quite know how to spell his name. I'll spell that name. H-U-Y-G-E-N-S, Huygens. In Huygens's wave theory, only the number of waves is plugged in. According to more recent theory, electromagnetic fields are plugged in. Thus, today, in terms of what is actually contained in the formulas, a certain liberality in the development of the theories is already the rule. Therefore, we shouldn't resist so very much if spiritual science finds it necessary now to add spirit to these dancing space-traveling equations. Neither what Newton wanted, nor what the thoroughly modern physicist wants, indeed, just add spirit to them. Only first, we just have to know what spirit is. That isn't based on any theory, but on higher knowledge. Thus, I believe that more and more is being contributed to a true understanding of Goethe's theory of color because of the things that Dr. Rebell was kind enough to present today. Nevertheless, I do not believe that it is possible yet to go into such questions as those posed, for example, by Dr. Stein, because then we would have to go into the whole nature of electricity. And that touches on questions that can only be addressed, I don't say solved, in the realm of anthroposophy. That is, because we begin then to arrive at concepts that overturn everything we are currently accustomed to recognizing theoretically about the physical world. Even if we have gotten away from it somewhat these days, it hasn't been so long since we were calculating in terms of electrical currents and the like. Now, however, what we are actually dealing with in the case of electrical currents, what I'm going to say to you now is solely the result of higher knowledge, is not something that streams in. Rather, in reality, we are dealing with the fact, if I may indicate it schematically, that if we have a wire here, that a so-called electrical current is flowing through, in reality, we have a gap. If I want to designate reality, I am speaking now of a degree of reality that, of course, many won't find valid. If I want to designate the reality here, for example, as plus A, then I would have to designate the reality within the wire as minus A. So we have here an absorbing of something, instead of what is actually always seen as something flowing in. Essentially, what we are dealing with is the fact that if there is an electrical conductor there, it doesn't actually constitute something that fills up. Rather, it constitutes a hollow space in the spiritual. And now, that takes us to the nature of the will, which Dr. Stein only touched upon before, and which is also based on the fact that with nerves, for example, we are not dealing with something that fills up, but with hollow channels, hollow tubes, through which the spiritual is drawn on and through which the spiritual passes. But as I said, that would lead too far afield today, and all I have been able to do was to take up the task of showing to what degree, or rather how I meant it, when I said that these more recent phenomena are actually in line with the further development of Goethean color theory. That is the end of Part 11, the discussion statement by Rudolf Steiner, and the end of the cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Light Course.